This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Are you ready to take your business to the next level? Every day there are countless books and articles that are published offering the key on how to make your business a success. It's easy to feel overwhelmed trying to keep up and run your business. That's why Deb Creer created the Business Power Hour. Keep up on the latest trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. Let the Business Power Hour do the heavy work for you.
Good morning. I am Deb Creer, and I am passionate about giving professionals the tools that they need to make themselves and their businesses as successful as possible. And today we're going to be having so much fun. We're going to be talking about something near and dear to my heart. And so please join us in welcoming Howard Tiersky to our program today. Welcome, Howard.
Thanks. Hey, Deb. How's it going? Glad to be here.
It is going just fantabulous. Let me tell people a little bit about you, and then we will dive into this. So Howard Tiersky is the Wall Street Journal best-selling author of Winning Digital Customers, The Antidote to Irrelevance. Howard is the founder of two companies that enable large brands to win in the digital world. One is From, the digital transformation agency, and the other is Innovation Loft. So again, Howard, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Great. Well, you know, I always love talking to my guests and finding out how they got to where they are today. So give us a little bit of information and tell us how you discovered that this is your passion in life.
Sure. Well, my initial passion was theater.
Okay.
And I went to school to study theater directing.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that professionally for a little while, but in parallel with that, I got very interested in computer graphics.
Okay.
I was doing a lot of work with computer graphics in the very early era. This is the 90s, Photoshop 2.0, Macro Mind Director, that sort of thing, when we were making CD-ROMs and Laserdisc shows and things like that before the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing that work in addition to my theater directing, which, you know, especially at the beginning, is not a particularly lucrative career.
Right.
I started doing a lot of corporate work, doing computer graphics and multimedia. And so I was sort of in that place at the time that the internet really became commercialized.
Okay.
And so I started to get pulled in at very large companies to help advise on their first internet sites, for example. At a time when companies were trying to understand, I would go in and present, what is the internet and why would it be relevant to a business? People would say,
what the heck?
Universities, like, why would we want to be on the internet? And now it seems like an absurd question, but back then it was perfectly reasonable. So I've been doing that all this time since then. And of course, it was been a fantastic ride. I just sort of having been in the right place at the right time, I got the opportunity to combine together things that I was really enthusiastic about that had led me to the theater, which is to say technology and storytelling, engaging an audience. You know, these are all, and working with multidisciplinary teams, including people more on a creative side and a technical side and even a business side, because theater also is a business. You have to attract an audience, et cetera. So I found that many of the things that I loved about theater were also present in this digital world with the added element that I could actually make a living at it. So I wound up, you know, it's fast forward to today. I mean, it's hard to believe that so many years I've been doing this now for, 27 years or something like that, working in this digital world as it's gone from this relatively obscure additional thing a company might do to just be on the internet, mm-hmm. hardly core to their business, mm-hmm. to something which entire businesses are built around, mm-hmm. and businesses which fail to prioritize efficiently mm-hmm. wind up being irrelevant and very often going out of business, no matter how large or successful they may have once been.
Right. You know, and I always love it when businesses tell me, oh, I'm a brick and mortar. I don't need a website. You know, how many times when we're getting ready to go to a brick and mortar place, do we type them in? You know, even if it's just where the heck are they located? So mm-hmm. if you don't have at least a basic presence, you're in serious trouble.
Well, I think that there's no question that's true. And it probably goes beyond that, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, look what happened during COVID.
Right.
If you weren't able to do online pickup mm-hmm. in the store, mm-hmm. if you're a restaurant, you weren't able to deliver, mm-hmm. if you didn't have a digital connection to your customer, very often that meant you were out of business. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why COVID accelerated the mm-hmm. sort of digital transformation of the world so much.
Right.
I think that today our customers mm-hmm. have become digital. You know, mm-hmm. they're living that digitally centric lifestyle. Right. And so, you know, if you want to run a successful business, you have to be responsive to mm-hmm. the needs of your customers. Mm-hmm. And like, let me give you an example of one example I love is what Taco Bell has been doing. Mm. You know, you could argue that there's not a much more of a brick and mortar type
right.
business than mm-hmm. quick service restaurants, mm-hmm. right? I mean, nobody wants a digital taco, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they want to come and they want to get their mm-hmm. their food, if you call it food, you know, at a place like Taco Bell, but whatever. But what they've been doing is they've been adding a second drive-through lane to their restaurants. So they mm-hmm. have the traditional drive-through lane where people are going to pull up and, you know, mm-hmm. decide what they want and order and pay and all that. And as you know, that can take a while. And then they have another drive-through lane, like depends on the restaurant, sometimes it's the opposite side of the building mm-hmm. or whatever, for people who've already placed an order mm-hmm. digitally, already received a text that the order is ready. Of course, they've already paid for it. And all mm-hmm. they have to do is go up and pick it up. Mm-hmm. And so those people can go through much more rapidly. So mm-hmm. I think that's a good example of a business that hasn't moved away from being brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. They're not saying, you know, we're going to deliver, you know, I mean, they may have a delivery service, but it's mm-hmm. not all about some completely digital experience, but they're recognizing that people living that digital lifestyle, they don't want to be, you know, in line with the people mm-hmm. who are sitting there asking about what's the difference between a tostada mm-hmm. and a burrito.
Right. You know, and you're so right that COVID just leapfrogged us probably 10 years, mm-hmm. definitely five, in how we were doing business. Because, you know, we started kind of moving that way with, you know, with Uber delivers and, you know, some of the big stores like, you know, Walmart and Kroger and all of those were kind of starting with a you can order online type of thing. But of course, they prefer you to go in because you buy more that way. You know, and but they were just, you know, kind of tinkering with it, all of those things. And then overnight, it was, we can't go into those stores anymore. We can't go into those restaurants. And I think that is exactly what you're saying. That's why we saw so many small businesses struggle and unfortunately so many go out of business.
Yeah. And now there are restaurants that are able to go back to full mm-hmm. dining room service, of course, depending on the state and the mm-hmm. laws and all that. And some of those are seeing that despite having significant mm-hmm. number of diners, they're still getting huge amounts right. of online orders. Mm-hmm. And so we see restaurants whose business today mm-hmm. is in some cases almost double mm-hmm. what it was pre-COVID mm-hmm. because they've opened themselves up to a whole new market that mm-hmm. previously they really weren't focused on. In fact, I know of several restaurants that have bought adjacent facilities simply to expand their kitchens mm-hmm. so that they could make enough food right. to satisfy not only mm-hmm. their dining room customers, but all their Uber Eats and Grubhub mm-hmm. and Seamless and all these types of requests.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and I think a big part is as consumers, we've decided we like that. You know, we can either go pick it up or we can have it delivered. You know, I tell people, I say, you know, I like this world. I don't have to put shoes on, you know, and it really is one of those things where we really have gotten used to it. We were traveling last week and we were in Savannah having a great time, you know, and I mean, Savannah is known for its food, for its restaurants, all of those things. We had Uber meals three times, you know, it was just, we'd had long days, you know, you just want to go back to the hotel. You want to relax. And, you know, that was what we did. And, you know, it was great to be able to do that.
Yeah. Hotel room service is never going to be the same. And mm-hmm. I think this is, you know, you see all of these shifts that, mm-hmm. You know, the car rental industry, for example, that used to make mm-hmm. a lot of money renting GPS devices. Well, right. that's gone, right?
Yeah.
Everyone just uses their phone, mm-hmm. right? So these sometimes, you know, what's an opportunity for one business, you know, maybe mm-hmm. harming another one. In the case of hospitality mm-hmm. and hotels now, we see that the idea that you can charge, you can have overpriced room service mm-hmm. because people want the convenience. Mm-hmm. And even if they have to, you know, how often
I'm
do you
not
wait
paying
an hour?
$10 for a burger.
Mm-hmm. I'll bet you that Uber Eats can get me that food faster mm-hmm. than room service.
Mm-hmm. And it's probably better. Let's be honest. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And listen, some hotels have fantastic room mm-hmm. service, but they had a monopoly on being able to mm-hmm. say, well, you know, unless you want pizza or Chinese, if you mm-hmm. want a decent meal in our hotel, mm-hmm. you're going to have to order from our room service and pay whatever the premium is. And now all of a sudden everyone's got, you know, everything opened up to them. So I absolutely mm-hmm. think, you know, you see the winners and the losers mm-hmm. in every one of the, that's what happens during times of transformation, mm-hmm. but you're right. One concept that is often talked about in personal development is that when people do the same thing, when they change their behavior for 4 weeks or six mm-hmm. weeks, you know, you hear different durations. Mm-hmm. You know, if you exercise, you force yourself to exercise mm-hmm. every day for 6 weeks, you're going to keep doing it mm-hmm. because now it's a habit.
Right.
And COVID, you know, sort of forced everybody mm-hmm. to change their behaviors mm-hmm. for a period of time. And now they've done those new behaviors for so long that many of those behaviors mm-hmm. have become people's new habits. Mm-hmm. So even when that forcing function of COVID is mm-hmm. removed, they're going to keep doing the mm-hmm. many, many of those things. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. I was talking to somebody the other day who did had their groceries delivered. You know, we still went shopping. I mean, you know, you time it differently, all those various things, but he had said, no, we're not going in a store, going to have everything delivered. And he discovered exactly what I was saying before. He saves money by doing this because he's not doing the impulse purchases. And he said, I may never go in a grocery store again. And if you're somewhere where they can deliver within 4-ish hours, you know, that's a big time saver.
Yeah. I love how Instacart actually tells you how many hours you saved. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess they add up all the hours their shoppers spent. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I look on Instacart, and since I started using it at the beginning of COVID, mm-hmm. it's like 183 hours
right.
of shopping that mm-hmm. I've saved, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, whoa, that's substantial. Mm-hmm. So aside from the impulse purchases, mm-hmm. I value my time mm-hmm. enough to say, right. hey, you know, I'm mm-hmm. and it doesn't even add that much. I guess they jack up the prices a little bit, but mm-hmm. I think it's well worth it. So,
right.
Yeah. And of course, we see the same thing in the workplace now. Mm-hmm. I hear from so many people, now that I've had the opportunity to work from home, I'm never going back. Mm-hmm. And part of this great resignation that we're experiencing, part of it is companies mm-hmm. saying, okay, folks, time to come back to the office.
Right. And then like, yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm.
Eh, that's okay. If you're going to make me work in the office again, I'm just going to find mm-hmm. another job. There's plenty of them out there. So mm-hmm. Yeah, we're seeing many see changes mm-hmm. in terms of many aspects of how we work, play, live, everything.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so what it means is we have to develop those relationships differently with our customers. It's funny that we're having this discussion today because earlier this morning I was listening on the radio. I actually still listen to a radio and I get a real newspaper. I'm showing my age, right? But they had a story on and they were talking about the fact that, you know, it even just 10 years ago, to build a relationship with a customer, you ran an ad, you know, you bought a billboard, you did something, you know, so it was TV, it was print, it was, you know, could be local, could be national, you know, all of those various things. And then you built that relationship when that little person came toddling in to your establishment and you said, hey, Howard, how you doing today? Great to see you, you know, and even if I didn't know your name, you know, I still just greeted you and all of those. And that was where we built those relationships. And now, nobody's toddling in. They might be dashing in if they're still even doing that. But we absolutely positively have to build those relationships with people online now.
Well, absolutely. And most businesses can do a much better job of that online mm-hmm. because, you know, this idea of the store where you go, you know, like the Cheers theme song, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes you want to go where everybody right. knows your name.
You want to go Norm when you walk in, right?
Well, exactly. So, that's a nice idea, but I don't know about you, but I don't think I had any place in my life that was like that. Mm-mm. I think now, you know, some people do. Yeah. I know my daughters often go to a little coffee. Mm-hmm. It's like mm-hmm. a Starbucks, but it's not brand. It's just a independent right. place. Mm-hmm. They know the owner. Mm-hmm. They get welcomed. Mm-hmm. That's one relationship they have in their lives. I think I have none, right? When I go to my grocery store, they don't know me.
No.
When I go to, you know, so this notion is it's a wonderful feeling, but the truth is it's an edge case.
Right.
Very few actual business relationships of a B2C nature are along those lines. And so while in theory, an individual human may be able to provide a more personal experience if they really know you and you really have a long-standing relationship, most people don't have very many of those. And so maybe their doctor, you know, but so their dentist, but so as a result, you know, when a website is able to leverage all the data that it has about you and artificial intelligence, or certainly a social media site like Facebook that knows everything you've liked and everything you've read, they're actually in a much stronger position. Because even if I go to Best Buy twice a month for 10 years, am I talking to the same person?
Right.
Does that person know all the stuff I've done at Best Buy before?
No. Absolutely not. Yeah. You know, and it is about that relationship. You know, we all know it's about know, like, trust. And, you know, when I know, like, and trust you, then I will give you my money or I'll tell somebody else, you know, hey, you need to work with this company. So tell us a little bit about your book. I didn't have the chance to read it, and so I'm going to have to make sure that I do. But tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. Well, having worked for more than 20 years with large Fortune 1000 type companies, I, you know, on digital transformation, even before we were calling it that particular buzz term, I've gotten the opportunity to see a lot of things that work, a lot of things that don't work. You know, I've been a part of many successes and many failures. And so when you see so many examples of companies trying to change and trying to transform and trying to become more digital, you start to see some patterns. And my consulting practice, and I've run my own company now for almost 15 years, and we work with many, many large brands. And part of the value that we bring to our clients is that we've been there and done that so much that they think they're dealing with some kind of a unique challenge or unique situation. It's not unique to us. Or they have a plan of how they're going to get from point A to point B, and we can see a bunch of risks or challenges that they may be encountering that maybe they haven't thought about because, well, we've been down this road before. We've been down it many, many, many times. It's not genius. It's just experience. So the book was really, I felt I wanted to document all that, to make a guide for people who we couldn't necessarily work with as a company. You know, I run a company of about 100 people, so we're very blessed to have many great clients, but you know, there's a lot of companies we don't work with for one reason or another. And so this was really a description of the five-step process that we use to help companies with their digital transformations. And we've had many, many successful ones using this process. So, you know, I would never in a million years say there's only one way to be successful and this is it. I'm sure that's not the case. But I do know that there are a lot of ways to be unsuccessful. And what I've tried to do in this book, here, I'll hold it up.
Oh, yes. Be Vanna. Hold it up. Winning digital customers.
Winning digital customers. What I try to do in this book is document a process that we use that we know is one path to success. And to do it in some detail, because that's why it's, you know, such a big book.
Right. It's not an ebook.
Well, you can get the Kindle version, of course. But yeah, it's not a, it's not like a little pamphlet, because we try to go through each of the key five stages of successful digital transformation and provide really detailed tools and examples. We give a lot of case studies. And again, we know the problems. If you're trying to go down this path, we know some of the problems that you may encounter. And we try to alert you to those problems in advance, say, you might encounter this, you might encounter that. And here are some tactics to overcome those challenges and problems. And actually, in addition to this lengthy tome, it also comes with access to a password protected website that contains hours of supplemental videos, templates and tools and other things, because really our goal that someone can take this book and use it as their guidebook, their blueprint to a much more successful digital transformation.
Right. You know, and you mentioned that you've worked with big companies. This is for small companies too. You know, even if you're just the one person, you know, type of business, in some ways it's easier because you have fewer products, you have, you know, it's, you're scaling everything down. I mean, when you're talking about a gigantic company, you know, Walmart, you know, is a great example. I mean, they have so many things that, you know, it's, you know, clearly they, you know, that's why they have teams that are dedicated just to doing things like this. But, you know, if you just have a handful of products or services, you can do these same steps and be very successful too, because it's not just for the big guys. the steps work for anybody.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, my career has been working with large companies, because they have more money, you know?
Right. And it's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, I wrote it from the perspective of the work we've done with large enterprises. Mm-hmm. However, I've heard from many people who've bought the book and said, I applied it to my kind of small and medium business and the practices work very well. So I know I've gotten that feedback, and I run what you could argue is a small, consulting firm relative to the large companies that I've worked with. So I think you're right. There are some things you need to adapt and such, but I agree that, 80 to 90% of this is equally applicable. And I totally agree with your point that it's actually easier when you're a small company. There's no question that's true. Sometimes I get the question, do small companies need to be thinking about digital transformation? And I'm like, well, absolutely.
Yeah. Because
you're targeting the same customers, so they have the same needs. And almost all small companies compete with large companies. I mean, the small diner on the corner is competing with Starbucks, is competing with McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts. So yeah, you need to be in the, and the customer isn't giving you a handicap. They're not saying, oh, well, I have lower they may have lower expectations in a sense, but that doesn't accrue to your advantage. Meaning if they think they're going to get a better experience, they're most likely going to go where they're going to get the better experience or the better price or the better product. So you need to be able to compete. And what you said is absolutely right. So much of what I talk about in this book are the challenges that large companies face trying to transform. And a lot of it has to do with scale and organizational issues. And when you're smaller and more nimble, you absolutely can do it more easily and often more rapidly. And I wish more small businesses would take advantage of that advantage that they have over their large competitors, because of course large competitors have many advantages over small companies, right? They have so many more resources.
Not the least of which is money.
Money, a bigger brand, more awareness, all these kinds of things. And small companies, when they see an angle where they actually have an advantage over the big companies, they really want to take advantage of it.
Right. Yeah, I don't know why I just thought of this. Years ago, when we lived in Colorado, I worked for the American Cancer Society. And we worked with a small brewery in the little town of Golden. And, and we all kind of, know what Golden Beer, that big company is. And so this smaller, and it was a much smaller company. I mean, they literally brewed beer out of their garage. And their tagline was the second largest brewery in Golden. And so they embraced the fact that they had, a very limited supply. And so you knew if you wanted that beer, you'd better get that beer when they said, hey, our kegs have been tapped. And were they going to compete with Coors? No, they weren't going to come anywhere close to competing with Coors. But when they found their little niche, and this was before the whole craft beer craze. I just love that tagline, the second largest brewery in Golden. And it was so funny because they really did embrace that they weren't that big guy, but they could, they still had good quality products, all of those various things.
Absolutely. Smaller companies should compete on their strengths. I mean, I'm in the same business. I compete with companies like Accenture, Deloitte, McKinsey, IBM, and someone might say, well, gosh, how can you as a smaller company compete with IBM? It's easy. It's easy because we have strengths that they don't have, even though they have strengths that we don't have. And does that mean every customer prefers us to IBM? No.
No.
But we need far fewer customers than IBM needs.
Right.
So it's just a matter of identifying. But are there customers for whom what we offer as a smaller company is better than what IBM offers? 100% absolutely true.
Right.
Just like some people would vastly prefer a craft beer to a bottle of Coors that comes off of a production line. And you could see that same apply, whether it's a small bed and breakfast competing with Marriott or a small independent plumber competing with some giant conglomerate. You could see that in almost any industry. So I absolutely think that small companies should never feel in any way intimidating about having large competitors. But don't try to play the game the way they do. Try to convince people you're bigger than McDonald's,
But, you're not bigger than McDonald's unless you're, who is bigger than McDonald's? Down here, it'd be Chick-fil-A. You can't compete on that level. So that is where you absolutely have to know who your target market is and how to reach them. That is absolutely critical.
Yeah. Yeah. and what is differentiated about you mm-hmm. compared to your competitors.
Mm-hmm. And, right. Well, you mentioned that in your book, you talk about the five steps. Now, we want people to buy the book, so we're not going to, you know, give away all of the secret sauce, so to speak. But tell us a little bit about those five steps.
Sure. Yeah. Believe me, there's no way to get the whole book into a podcast.
I know. It's a long audio book, right?
Happy to tell you. Yeah. So the five steps are the first three are a kind of a sequential process.
Okay.
The first is to understand your customer. Mm-hmm. And so many businesses have, let's call it a 50 to 60% mm-hmm. accurate understanding of their customer. Very mm-hmm. few businesses are completely clueless about their customer. Mm-hmm. But so often, and we know this because we go in all the time and do mm-hmm. research and come back with insights, important insights about mm-hmm. the customer that were not understood previously. Mm-hmm. And so because when we talk about digital transformation, I mean, transformation is just a fancy word for change, right? Mm-hmm. Or big change. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that, I mean, you could have a business and you could change it in all kinds of ways that may or may not make your business better, mm-hmm. right? You could make your business worse, mm-hmm. or you could spend a bunch of money making changes that neither make it neither better nor worse, except that you've just spent a bunch of money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the aiming process is mm-hmm. really important to understand, well, where are my customers frustrated mm-hmm. today? Where are they confused? Where are they disappointed? Where am I not mm-hmm. giving them the quality of experience they're looking for? Or where are there opportunities, even if they're not perceiving mm-hmm. a problem, where are there opportunities to really create new delight mm-hmm. in the customer experience mm-hmm. and create more value for the customer? You want to start there rather than mm-hmm. say, oh, we need virtual reality. We need QR codes. We need drones. We need 3D mm-hmm. printing. I mean,
yeah, you don't need those things.
But you got to start from saying, you know, what is the problem we're trying to solve? Mm-hmm. And in any business, the problem you're always trying to solve is how can I create more value for the customer mm-hmm. so that the customer will be willing to give more value to me and will mm-hmm. want to tell their friends and will want to come back again and again.
Right.
So that's the first step. Mm-hmm. And then once you've got that as a grounding, and by the mm-hmm. way, in the book, we provide all kinds of techniques. Like, so what's the how, right? Mm-hmm. How do you understand your customer?
Right.
You're mm-hmm. in strain, really, and say, I'm going to understand my customer as well mm-hmm. as I can. No, that's not how you do it.
I always love it. I ask people, who's your target audience? Everyone. No.
Right. No, you have to understand who you're going after mm-hmm. and what are their, you know, what's keeping them up at night? Mm-hmm. What are their hopes and dreams? Mm-hmm. What are their fears? What, when they buy from you, why? Mm-hmm. Why do they choose you mm-hmm. over a competitor?
Right.
And when they choose not to buy from you, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or if mm-hmm. they are your customer and then they leave, mm-hmm. what is it that sent them away? Mm-hmm. And you don't want to speculate on those things.
Because you're going to guess wrong.
Quite likely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially you don't want to speculate if there's another way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are many techniques, but you could put them all in one category called mm-hmm. research. Mm-hmm. And some of those forms of research involve talking to customers directly or observing mm-hmm. them. Some of them involve looking at data. Mm-hmm. Some of them involve talking to other people who mm-hmm. spent time with your customers. Just as one example, so many companies have employees that spend all day every day with customers, whether mm-hmm. those are waitresses mm-hmm. or call center people or store associates or security guards or what mm-hmm. have you. And then you have people, you know, somewhere at the home office trying to figure out the next generation mm-hmm. of the product or the website. And very often, those people spend very little time with the customer.
Right.
So
and never do those two meet up.
Well, there's a huge missed opportunity mm-hmm. if they don't, right? Mm-hmm. If you say, well, I have these people who spent, you know, maybe they've been with you for 10 years and they spent mm-hmm. 1,500 hours a year with customers. These people mm-hmm. have spent, in that case, what did I just say? You know, 15,000 hours mm-hmm. with your customers. They've right. learned a thing or two, I guarantee. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so they've listened to the highs, the lows, the goods, the bads.
Yeah. And they understand the whys. Mm-hmm. They get someone on the phone and mm-hmm. in 2 minutes, they can tell whether this person's going to close or mm-hmm. not. Well, based on what? What mm-hmm. is the indication that they're giving? That data can be used to drive AI algorithms or mm-hmm. just the design of websites or marketing mm-hmm. or products or things like that. So that's the first step. And then once you have that as a foundation, the mm-hmm. next step is to design the future. You know, we call that mapping the journey. Mm-hmm. And so in the book, we talk a lot about techniques that are called customer journey mapping, mm-hmm. which is really just trying to be as specific as possible about, okay, so what is supposed to happen to mm-hmm. this customer? How do they find out about your business? Mm-hmm. There may be multiple paths, but mm-hmm. what are those paths? How do they find out about it? What is their process of mm-hmm. making a decision of shopping, of evaluating, mm-hmm. of picking, you know, of deciding whether they want the more expensive one or the less expensive mm-hmm. one, really understanding that. and going through each step of whatever the stages that you go through. Most businesses, there's 5, 6, 7 key stages. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's different for, say, repairing your toilet versus going on a cruise. The mm-hmm. stages might be a little different, but you still got this sequential process usually mm-hmm. of selecting and buying, and then you get some service or product is delivered mm-hmm. to you, and you may have a renewal component. So, you know, you want to first make sure you're clear on what's happening today. Mm-hmm. What is the experience your customers are already having? Mm-hmm. And how does that align with the broader picture of what you understand about them? Mm-hmm. Most of the time, you'll find there's all kinds of points of pain and confusion and challenges and problems. And then how do you, if you were to envision the ideal version of that, mm-hmm. that's really the future mm-hmm. journey that you want to map out. If you are rebuilding this business from the ground up today for an audience of like today's digital customers, mm-hmm. and you didn't have to worry about your pre-existing mainframe system or the leases you have on your stores or the fact that your employees aren't trained to do mm-hmm. certain things. If you put all that aside for a minute and said, what would be the experience that if I could provide it to my customers, I could stand toe to toe with anybody in my industry, mm-hmm. Amazon or Google or Facebook, or, you know, again, depends on your industry. Mm-hmm. We would be able to be delivering an experience to the customer that would be completely competitive for today's customer. Mm-hmm. And that's that step of envisioning and mapping the future journey. And then the third of those sequential steps, and it sounds, you know, obnoxiously straightforward, is to build it. Once right. you've created the vision for that journey, mm-hmm. you're not going to build it all at once, but you need to break it down into pieces, mm-hmm. into products and back-end infrastructure components mm-hmm. and say, okay, we need a new chatbot. We need to upgrade our app. We need some new content management system for our website. Mm-hmm. We need personalization, whatever it is that in order to bring that journey to life. And it's usually mm-hmm. a multi-year process. Mm-hmm. And you may never get 100% of the way there, because by the time you're 2/3 of the way there, the world may have changed again.
Right.
Your future journey again. Mm-hmm. But you have that North Star that you're headed towards. And in the book, we talk a lot about principles of design thinking, mm-hmm. which is a very effective, you know, mm-hmm. proven methodology for building individual products and web services and other things. So mm-hmm. That's the third. And those are kind of like the three main sequential mm-hmm. stages. And then in parallel to those two, we talk about the other two, one of which is to optimize the present. Mm-hmm. Because when you create that inspirational, aspirational vision of the future mm-hmm. that's going to take possibly a few years to get to, you know, you don't want to wait till then to be delivering value for your customers. Mm-hmm. So often when you do the kind of research I talked about before, you're able to also identify some problems that may be easy to solve. You know, mm-hmm. some problems require a complete revamp of all your technology mm-hmm. and retraining all your employees. But, you know, some are about rewording a button mm-hmm. or slightly changing the checkout mm-hmm. flow of your shopping cart or something like that. So you want to be identifying those little problems. Mm-hmm. And often there are many of them, and just be like you're the cleaning crew. You know, mm-hmm. you want to polish this and tweak that and sand that down a little bit. And if you continuously do that, while you're moving towards your bigger, more aspirational vision, mm-hmm. You get a good combination, because you get some immediate business impact while you're working towards something that's more transformational. Mm-hmm. And then the last of the five steps is to lead the change, which of course mm-hmm. is not really last. You have to start with great leadership, but mm-hmm. I talk about it last in the book because I figure it's easier to lay out first what's all the stuff that have to get done? Mm-hmm. And then kind of ask the question, what kind of leadership is it going to take
right.
to be able to get an organization to have enough creativity and vision mm-hmm. and insight and will, determination and will, and resources mm-hmm. and resourcefulness to be able to actually envision and then execute mm-hmm. on these types of journeys? And, you know, there are a lot of great legacy brands that are really struggling with trying mm-hmm. to transform right now. And there are other great legacy brands that have done an amazing job. Mm-hmm. So we know it can be done,
right.
but we know it's not easy. Mm-hmm. And the goal of these five steps, and it's not just the steps at the top level, because they may seem deceptively simple, but each mm-hmm. of the steps is covered for 75 pages in the book, mm-hmm. because very often the devil's in the details of mm-hmm. how do you do this in a successful way? So mm-hmm. that's a quick summary of those five steps in the book.
Right. You know, and you mentioned the legacy brands. You know, the one of the worst things that rears up and bites people is the phrase, but this is the way we've always done it. You know, and whether it's even having a website or doing, you know, anything, I mean, that I think really was one of the biggest things that hit people with COVID. You know, I had to laugh when they said, it's going to be 2 weeks, folks. I'm like, yeah, right. In what reality is this going to be 2 weeks? Now, 20-ish months into this, we're still kind of going, oi. But, you know, I think it really was an example of so many people going, this too shall pass, but it was this too shall pass quickly. And I don't think anybody really stopped to think, and I don't care, you know, if you're the mom and pop or the Amazons, the Walmarts, the whatever, I don't think anybody understood what really was going to happen. I always laugh now when we have people that say, I can't wait for it to get back to normal. Like, really? You think that we're going to go back to January of 2020 and everything's going to be hunky-dory? No, you know, things have now changed and will continue to change, you know, whether it's the hybrid workforces or, you know, how we order online, all of those things. And those companies that aren't embracing that really are going to be the ones that get left behind.
Yeah. Well, there's no question that, you know, you hear this phrase, the new normal, mm-hmm. you know, the truth is things are changing all the time and mm-hmm. they've been changing.
There's
years.
Not really a normal.
Right. It's very difficult to know, you know, businesses often lack, one of the reasons why businesses, I think, start to decline mm-hmm. is that they lack the imagination right. or the curiosity mm-hmm. to think about where are we going to be in 5 years? Mm-hmm. And I think that's critical because COVID or no COVID, mm-hmm. the world has been changing at a rapid pace, it's mm-hmm. going to continue to change. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you really have to be thinking about meeting the needs of your customers mm-hmm. as those needs change. For anyone who says, well, this is how we've always done it, you know, the answer is great. And that's going to meet the needs of the customers mm-hmm. who are doing things the way that they have always right. done. Mm-hmm. And there are always going to be mm-hmm. some.
Yeah.
There are some people who still mm-hmm. like to make their deposits by waiting in line with the mm-hmm. teller at the bank. Mm-hmm. There are some people who will never order food from Uber because they like to, you know, mm-hmm. but how, what percentage? Mm-hmm. And if you're hitching your wagon to the people who aren't changing, mm-hmm. you have a shrinking market, right. which is not a strategy for a long-term successful uh-uh. business. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I called my book, Winning Digital Customers, mm-hmm. the antidote to irrelevance. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, where's Woolworths? Mm-hmm. Where's Kodak?
Right.
Where's Blockbuster? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are plenty of examples of where's Circuit City mm-hmm. of businesses that at one time were very successful. Mm-hmm. And why were they successful? Because they met the needs of the time. Mm-hmm. They met the needs of the customers right. at that moment. And mm-hmm. usually when they became unsuccessful and went out of mm-hmm. business, it's usually not because they changed, mm-hmm. they got worse. Mm-hmm. You know, Blockbuster didn't get worse.
Right. Yeah.
But people didn't need that anymore. Right.
That little thing called Netflix came along.
Exactly. And Blockbuster didn't figure mm-hmm. out how to keep up with the changing mm-hmm. needs of customers. Mm-hmm. And so that's the answer to if you're at a company where somebody is saying, well, I've been doing this way for all these years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, well, you know, the world wasn't changing as fast mm-hmm. in the 80s and 90s mm-hmm. as it is today. And ask if they think that the customer is changing, you know, and mm-hmm. if they don't believe the customer is changing, then you need to show them data. Mm-hmm. Say, well, we're surveying customers. We're interviewing right. customers. This mm-hmm. is what we're seeing and hearing. And if they still don't believe you, well, you know,
then some people then you're never you go be on able to the next. Yeah, it's yeah, like, okay.
Maybe you need to find another job. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, because that's not a company that's decision making is mm-hmm. rational.
Right. You know, and it is scary to be thinking about these changes. You know, and granted, they were obviously forced on us in many cases. And yeah. you know, people had to shift dramatically. But if you had been planning all along and had all your so-called ducks in a row, you know, was it going to be bumpy? Yes. But you still would have had that foundation to be able to make that rapid change to, you know, all e-ordering, all e, you know, whatever, you know, having to deliver all of those things. And, you know, and I think that is probably one of the biggest issues is people just don't take those steps to start with. You know, they don't exactly know who their audience is. They don't know, in many cases, who their competitors are. You know, you probably talk with a lot of big businesses, but, you know, I talk with a lot of companies that think that they are unique. There ain't nothing unique anymore. You know, right. long gone are the days of somebody buying a pet rock. But that's one of those that just baffles you, right? But yeah, it's like you said, with the problems, you know, the solutions are also the same too. There's really, now there are enhancements and things like that. And I think a great example of, you know, a company that completely and totally embraced this rapid change is what we're doing right here. You know, Zoom has now become a noun, a verb, an adverb, an adjective. I mean, all those various things. And that other little company called Microsoft that has Skype. You know, it's like, Skype, really? I don't even have it on my machine anymore. And, you know, and it was just one of those, and I firmly believe that the big thing with Zoom was when they said, and this spoke to my little PR heart, when they said, schools can use it for free. Ka-ching. You know, because they went, well, if my kids can use it, must be simple enough for me to use too. You know, and then of course Zoom has continued to rapidly evolve. And to you know, because now they're trying to figure out how you do conferences with a hybrid mix and all sorts of things. And you know, at some point, will they become irrelevant? Possibly, you know, because some other thing might come along. But yeah, Zoom really was one of those great success stories of this whole thing.
Yeah. And the future of Zoom will be based on its leadership and, mm-hmm. and how well they steer their opportunities. Mm-hmm. I mean, AOL has become irrelevant. MySpace has become irrelevant. Mm-hmm. But look at Disney, you know, mm-hmm. as big and as important or mm-hmm. more so than ever. Look at Nike. Look at mm-hmm. Harley Davidson. So, you know, look at Starbucks, look at mm-hmm. Domino's. So, we can find many examples of brands mm-hmm. that have been navigated successfully mm-hmm. through times of rapid change. And of course, plenty of examples of mm-hmm. ships that got, that landed on the rocks during a storm or during difficult times. So Zoom has every opportunity to mm-hmm. be successful in the future. And of course, they have fierce competitors, including mm-hmm. Microsoft now with Teams.
Right.
And we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. But, it's a race.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and it's always fun to watch when, say, the big guys try something. The various forays that Google tried to go up against Facebook. Mm. You know, that was one of those that was always interesting. Because you would have thought that just the name brand recognition that Google and now I'm not even remembering what they had. It was Google Plus. Google Plus. Yes, that was it. And we all went, ooh, it's by Google. You know. It lasted, you know, and it was actually, if I remember right, their third attempt. And then they were smart enough to go, okay, you know, we're not going to compete against Facebook. We're just going to give up. But Facebook also learned people aren't going to buy smartphones from us. You know, sometimes when you get out of your lane, that's where your problem comes in.
Yeah, well, Amazon learned that same lesson. Amazon mm-hmm. tried to launch the Fire smartphone, and that mm-hmm. also was unsuccessful. But, you know, I don't know if it's really true that if you get out of your lane, people won't follow along. I think a lot has to do with the specifics because, of course, look at the success of Google and Amazon. Google's lane initially was search. Amazon's mm-hmm. lane initially was books.
Books, yeah.
So much of their success mm-hmm. came by getting out of their lane. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that part of the path to success is being willing to accept failure and being willing mm-hmm. to try a lot of things and know that sometimes you're going to mm-hmm. get the recipe wrong. And then you have to just make a strategic decision mm-hmm. when you want to try to reformulate it and keep shooting for that mm-hmm. same goal. Or when you want to say, you know what, maybe that goal isn't worth pursuing further right mm-hmm. now. We're going to put it aside and we're going to focus on something mm-hmm. else.
Right. Now, one of the things that you talk about is customer love. And so mm-hmm. tell us a little bit more about that because it's not loyalty. It's something very different. So talk to us about customer love.
Sure. Well, I think that the single most valuable asset that any business can have is the emotional connection that their customers have to the company, the brand, the products. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look around at brands that are some of the most lucrative in the world, mm-hmm. like Apple, for example, for mm-hmm. an easy example. And we all know that Apple's customers are passionate. Likewise, you know, some of the brands I mentioned earlier, Disney or Harley Davidson, mm-hmm. many of these most successful brands with the highest, not only the largest companies, but the companies with the highest profit margins, with the, mm-hmm. with the highest multiples in terms of their stock performance, are companies where customers, you know, they're not just doing transactions. Mm-hmm. They're not just patronizing the company. They believe in the company and they mm-hmm. connect their identity with that company in a mm-hmm. certain sense. They have an emotional connection. And so we're always in search of trying to figure out whether you're an insurance company or mm-hmm. an accounting firm or a company that puts satellites in the air or mm-hmm. whatever. How do we create that kind of emotional connection mm-hmm. with customers? And, you know, some people, and we have a formula for that in the book, because one of the things we've tried to do over the years, and I sometimes feel bad because it sounds a little bit unromantic, but what we've tried to do is sort of reverse engineer that love, mm-hmm. and figure out, well, what can a business really do to inspire mm-hmm. it? But sometimes people do say, well, you know, isn't that the same as loyalty? And, you know, it's in the English language. You know, we mm-hmm. have sometimes words and they mean different things. Mm-hmm. the kind of love that I'm talking about mm-hmm. is not the same as the love that I have towards my wife or my children. It's the love that we have when someone says, I love Starbucks, mm-hmm. right? So we use the word love in different ways. Mm-hmm. And the word loyalty, you know, can be used to imply a strong emotional connection, like mm-hmm. the loyalty in Saving Private Ryan of mm-hmm. the soldiers that won't leave a man on the battlefield. But in business today, when we talk about the idea of loyalty, that's not mm-hmm. what we mean. When we talk about loyalty in business, we don't mean emotion. Mm-hmm. We mean a behavior. Mm-hmm. And that behavior is repeat transactions. Mm-hmm. In business parlance today, if we say a customer is loyal, what we mean is they shop with us. However, you know, depends mm-hmm. on the industry, right? Some industries you're loyal if you come once. If mm-hmm. if I buy a Ford once every 2 years, I'm extremely loyal.
Right.
If I go to Starbucks once every 2 years, I'm not, right? Mm-hmm. My Starbucks loyal customers might go 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the industry, but that measure of how often I come is typically what we mean by loyalty. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. Measuring how often your customers come is important. Mm-hmm. And we certainly want customers to come back again and again and again.
Right.
But customers come back for many reasons. Mm-hmm. I go to the same gas station most of the time, mm-hmm. not because I have any emotional connection to that gas station.
It's convenient.
Right. It happens to be on my route. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if another gas station came up that was a little closer, a little more convenient, mm-hmm. You know, I might go there. But mm-hmm. if someone is an Apple person, they have their Apple, their Mac computer and their mm-hmm. iPhone. If a Microsoft store opens up that's 5 minutes closer than the Apple store, mm-hmm. are they going to switch to Microsoft? I mean, no way. No way. Because they're committed. Mm-hmm. So it's just a different thing is mm-hmm. all. And so then in the book we talk about, so how do you inspire the love of your customers? Mm-hmm. And we have a three-level model. It's conceptually pretty straightforward to understand. Mm-hmm. It's more difficult to execute. The first level is to consistently meet their needs. Mm-hmm. Very consistently meet the needs of your customers. Mm-hmm. Now, that is not enough to win their love. Mm-hmm. But if you fail to do that, then nothing else is really going to get you there. Mm-hmm. And of course, as we talked about earlier, in order to really successfully, consistently meet your customers' needs, you do need to know what they are. Mm-hmm. Or just be super lucky. Mm-hmm. But let's just assume.
Sometimes that really does happen, but most of the time, nah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it can, you know, mm-hmm. people can follow the totally wrong. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it's possible to get totally lost in the woods mm-hmm. and just stumble across buried treasure, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it could happen, but this is probably not the strategy that you want to mm-hmm. use at your company to try to drive success, mm-hmm. right? So, so that's the first step is mm-hmm. to consistently meet their needs. The second is to occasionally, periodically, mm-hmm. do something extra that delights mm-hmm. the customer. Goes beyond just mm-hmm. meeting their needs. And the third is to stand for something mm-hmm. that aligns with their values, mm-hmm. something they mm-hmm. believe in. Mm-hmm. And so that's the three things to mm-hmm. do. And, you know, sometimes when we describe this to companies that want to use it, mm-hmm. they're like, well, why? Like, I mean, I can see why some of these things are mm-hmm. important, but like, especially, well, why do we have to stand for something? Mm-hmm. Because the truth is that many companies really don't stand for anything at all.
Right.
Not really.
Average is okay.
Right. Right. And you know, if you ask them, why does your company exist? They'd say, generate shareholder return.
Right. Because you know? I want to make money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. And that's fine. Businesses like that can be successful, mm-hmm. but they won't win their customers' love.
Right.
And therefore they won't be the most successful mm-hmm. businesses. And so, you know, if you have a dry cleaners, it just says, yeah, we're dry cleaners. We opened on this corner. People need their clothes cleaned. Mm-hmm. They come and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But if you have another dry cleaners that's passionate about mm-hmm. making sure that you look your very best, and every mm-hmm. time you walk in there, you can just feel mm-hmm. that their lives are committed mm-hmm. to your appearance. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a company that's, mm-hmm. if they're also meeting your needs and occasionally delighting mm-hmm. you, much better set up to inspire your long-term mm-hmm. love and loyalty. So, you know, the other point I guess I'd make about it is when we look at these three tiers and when we studied this to understand, well, why is it that these three things, meeting the customer's need, occasionally mm-hmm. delighting and standing for something, inspire that feeling of mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it, but I call it love, customer mm-hmm. love. And the answer turns out like this. When you meet the customer's needs, mm-hmm. there's a larger meaning the customer takes from it. Because one thing I learned, I worked for years and years with Tony Robbins, and one of the things mm-hmm. I learned from Tony was that emotions come from meaning. What's mm-hmm. the meaning we place on? Mm-hmm. And so when you meet someone's needs, mm-hmm. what's the meaning? Well, you could argue that one meeting would be, well, they're trying to meet my needs, mm-hmm. but that's inherent to the business relationship, mm-hmm. right? Very often, are you going to someplace mm-hmm. that's not, I mean, after all, They want your money. They're going to meet your need. Even the dry cleaner doesn't care about anything. It's going to do that. But when they fully meet your needs and do it consistently, they're demonstrating something that's more profound, which is that they understand you. As I mentioned earlier, you can't really fully meet someone's needs. You might meet some of their needs if you don't understand them. But if you fully meet their needs, you understand them. And it's a wonderful feeling to feel understood. Many of us walk around all day feeling misunderstood.
Right.
And then when they do something beyond, when they do something that they don't have to do to get your money, something you know, extra to delight you, what is the meaning of that? Why would a business do that? And the meaning that customers often derive is they care about me. They're doing that not because they need my money, because they're going to get my money whether they do that extra thing or not. They just must, they must care about me. And so now you've got a business that that understands me and cares about me. And then when you telegraph that you stand for something that that person resonates with, first of all, you convey some humanity because businesses can seem very antiseptic. And when they feel that your business really is committed to some idea, whether it's a political idea like Nike supporting Colin Kaepernick and Black Lives Matter, or whether it's Disney just being committed to family values, or Harley Davidson being committed to freedom in the open road, when you feel that someone really stands for, or a business stands for something, it gives a sense of humanity. And even more when that sense of what they're committed to is shared by you, then you have the feeling that they are like me. So when you have a relationship, imagine you just met somebody at a party, and after talking to them for a while, you thought, you know, this person, they understand me.
They get me.
Yeah, exactly. And they seem to care about me. And they kind of are like me in at least some important way. Does that sound like the fertile ground for a meaningful emotional relationship, whether that's true love or whether that's a strong friendship or whatever it may be? And I think that that's the reason why these components, which any business can pursue, but it takes work, can then inspire the love of your customers. And when you do that, now you have a competitive advantage that far exceeds, you know, having a more convenient location.
Right. You know, and sometimes it's simple little things. You know, I'm in Atlanta, so it's the home of Chick-fil-A. You know, when I go through Chick-fil-A's drive-through, you know, who goes in anymore, right? When they say, "It's my pleasure to serve you," that's very different than "thanks," you know, that you get, if you even get that at other places. Or, you know, during the pandemic, we ordered quite a bit of pizza. We like Papa John's, you know, like how it tastes, all those things. We had one delivery person. We had her multiple times. And so it was always fun to see her. Older woman. And as in older than me, and she would come up and she had a little box and it had all of the extras, you know, the little packages of Parmesan cheese and peppers and all of those things. And then, you know, you would take, you know, take that, you know, that was very different than them just throwing four of those in the thing. You know, she offered that. And then now, you know, granted, we are here in the South. As she left, she would say, "God bless you." And I mean, there was just that extra little wow that you thought, hey, you know, this, they, like you said, they care about me. And so, you know, a big part of that is obviously in training for customer service. You know, they're trained at Chick-fil-A to always say, "It's been my pleasure to serve you." And when they don't, they get in trouble for it. You know, and, but they also, there's, you know, if you just say, "It's my pleasure to serve you," that's very different than, "Hey, it's been my pleasure to serve you." Well, you know, and so there's that human touch that absolutely has to be in there.
There's no question. We've become very cynical about things that brands say. And you know, how often do we get told by our credit card company, we value you as a customer, as they're charging me a $25 late fee because I was one day late on my payment. You know, and it's like, So I think that it's important. It's great if you can get employees trained to have enough genuine authenticity when they say, "Thank you, you know, we value your business," or whatnot, that people really feel feel the love. That's a tough thing to train employees to do. And for those companies that have succeeded in doing it, that's a huge, a hugely successful thing. You know, the alternative is, if you can't get there, to not rely on words, you know, but to do things that show the love in more tangible forms. And however you get there, though, that's I think that's key. And you know, we went to a diner yesterday with my kids. It's a diner called the Jackson Hole. There's only three or four of them, I think. It's not really a chain, but there's a number of them in the New York, New Jersey area. And my kids were like, these people really like working here. And I was like, what makes you say that? And they were like, oh, well, when the guy sat us, he was telling us how they have this room and you should come back with your friends. And you know, they just got this vibe of like, these are people that were happy to be working at this diner. They were proud of it, which is not usually what you see when someone seats you or takes your order at a restaurant.
You know, and we really do pick up on those little subtleties, you know, and but it can be a big thing too. You know, I must be hungry because now I'm thinking about the Domino's ads where they're giving customer frees as opposed to customer fees, because you're always getting fees. And so Domino's is, you know, you might get something free. You might not, but just the thought that, well, hey, you know, I could order this and get, you know, free, whatever, you know, and that is just showing that little bit of love.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, oh my gosh, Howard, like I said at the very start, this is one of my favorite subjects, and we could talk about it forever, but we can't because we're at the top of the hour. Actually, we can have you on again and talk more about this, and that would be great. But until then, tell us more about your company and the services that you provide.
Oh, sure. So we work with mostly larger companies on digital transformation, which includes typically doing customer research to understand where the greatest opportunities are. Doing digital road mapping and journey mapping, as we talked about earlier, and design thinking, building out products. For example, we worked on building out the AAA new roadside assistance app. We do a lot of work for the Avis Budget Group on their various apps that relate to car rental. We work with other brands like Airbus, Transamerica, NBC Universal, and so on. We are. You can find us at from.digital. That's our website, which describes more about the work that we do and the approach that we take. And of course, we're always happy to talk to anyone who's interested in learning more.
Right.
With respect to my book and other material that I publish, you can learn more about my book, Winning Digital Customers. It's available wherever, of course, Amazon.
Wherever better books are sold.
Exactly. But there's also a website for it, winningdigitalcustomers.com, all one word. And if you go there, you first of all can get links to all the places you can get the ebooks and the regular books. And also you can download the first chapter for free. So if you just want to check it out, you have the option to do that there. And I post and publish quite a bit on LinkedIn. So you can check me out there. You can look me up under my name, Howard Tiersky. And I do twice weekly live cast. In addition, I have a podcast and articles and other things. So if you're interested in this stuff, I'm always putting something out there.
Cool. I love it. I love it. Well, this really has been fascinating. And, you know, we didn't cover all the stuff in my notes. And so we really do have to do this again. And I look forward to that. But do you have any final thoughts that you want to leave everyone with?
Well, you know, it's such an exciting time. I mean, I know in a way we've been through an ordeal with COVID. But on the other hand, you know, I just have this belief, you know, we hear about the downsides of digital, you know, Mark Zuckerberg being called before the Senate committee and all this stuff, you know, and how social media is destroying our children and all that. And of course there's downsides to everything, but my view is I think that digital is a great force for good in the world. And I think we saw that during COVID and I think it connects people. It enables people to pursue their passions in new ways, to create businesses so much more easily. And that's just not just about making money, but that's the spiritual endeavor of people figuring out how they can create value in the world. So I think I feel very privileged to live at this time. And I think that it's only accelerating. So I view the next decade with tremendous hope and optimism. So happy to be coming out of this sort of darker period with COVID. And, you know, I would encourage everyone to not feel in any way limited by where you can go with your businesses, because, you know, maybe there was a time when if you were a smaller business and you were dealing with giant enterprise clients for giant enterprise competitors, how could you ever compete? But now today with eBay and Etsy and Amazon Marketplace and Facebook and TikTok and all these ways to market yourself and, you know, getting a cheap MailChimp account. And I mean, there's just so much you can do. Publish your own book on Amazon. I mean, there's so many avenues that are available. Opportunity is so great. So, you know, I'm always encouraging everyone to make sure they see how much digital has opened opportunities for all of us in the world. And I hope everyone takes full advantage.
Great. I love it. I love it. Well, I have been having an absolutely fascinating conversation with Howard Tiersky. He is the author of Winning Digital Customers, The Antidote to Irrelevance. So be sure and check that out. I am Deb Creer, and everyone have a great day.
Tune in for our next program for even more trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. The Business Power Hour, hosted by Deb Creer, is proud to be part of the C-Suite Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.